I'll talk about Chinese perception of Europe. I think this topic maybe sounds a little bit strange because Pekka said, well, postmodern, what do you mean by that? So I just gave some explanation. Perception, of course, I think is both can be a very shallow thing and also can have some deep idea under it. So actually it can be shaped. So that's why I think we have to look at more discussion on some specific issues, and especially done by the intellectuals in the media. That's why I use the term perception, and the perception can bring us some more understanding of the Chinese understanding ideas about Europe. And how is what is postmodern? Why I use the term postmodern? Because nowadays, if I give a very simple word according to the Chinese understanding, what is Europe? And Chinese scholars will use the term postmodern Europe. I don't know if this is a legitimate term for the Europeans, but the Chinese understanding come from Robert Cooper. Robert Cooper is a high-ranking official of EU, and he is a British diplomat. I'm not so sure if our Finnish friends know him very well, but anyhow, when he invented the term postmodern state, pre-modern state, and modern state, this kind of category, it aroused a lot of discussion. And even some European friends don't like the term, but still, it's an interesting term, and we think it can, in many ways, reflect the European reality. So the Chinese scholars do adopt this term. And the other way to use this term is about postmodern philosophy, or we call it in a post-structure, maybe people more familiar with. But postmodern, I think the feature of it is to deconstruct things. And how to do it? Find out the relationship between power and knowledge, you will at last you will realize, well, actually some sound discourse, actually there is some power relation there and even ugly relationship underneath it. Of course, maybe now the term post-industrial society is widely used, but anyhow, post things actually is not a Chinese thing. It's happened here and also in other advanced Western countries. But the Chinese are in the process of modernization, industrialization. But still, I think it's interesting to look at how these happened in Chinese, how the Chinese intellectuals perceive post things, and I take the term postmodern. And then I will say something about how to find out Chinese perception of Europe. In terms of scope of inquiry, we can include these three kind of group of people. The first is government, the second is elites. The elites can be political, economic, media, or academic elites, and I'm much familiar with academics, and today's topic is all more talk about the academic discussion, and of course is the ordinary citizen, the masses. How to do that? I didn't do some specific survey, but I gave some comments, and I do this research according to my observation and also some literature review. That's my way of doing the study. Before I, because my discussion is based on this current research, so I will say something about what is the current research. I think the focus of the research more concentrate on the government position and elite perception. Why? Because Chinese society, as you all know, this is a top-down kind of a way of running things. Of course, citizens matter. Of course, that's for sure. And especially in these days, when internet so important, and the Chinese government become to exposed to more pressure from internet. This is the motivation for the Chinese government also pay attention to this. So they also encourage this kind of survey. At the same time, the European Union also have a strong interest to do this. Why? Because the European Union want to assume a position of normative power. So normative power in order to spread the norm of the Europeans, and then you should know what the Chinese people's a perception about Europe, about something the Europeans really cherish. In this context, we can find some large research projects have been done. For instance, Chinese Academy of Social Science have done this kind of survey, and this is a part of the big project of to do the investigation about Chinese condition, including Chinese public opinion toward international affairs and also to some internal affairs. And the other three are all done by actually Europeans or supported, funded by the Europeans, like Nottingham University has done a very big project. They do a lot of survey, they called Chinese views of the EU and Europe and their policy implication. And the total funding is 1.4 million euro. And the other also, I think, big projects. Here I listed some representative works, but I won't go to detail to introduce them. But I think the first piece talking about Chinese perception may occur in 2006. Most of the research will refer to this. It's done by a overseas Chinese scholar based in, actually before VUB, now College of Europe. He's done this, this is first piece. And also other people, both European scholars and Chinese scholars, if you have an interest, you can, I can say more about afterwards. These are the most recent piece done by a German researcher called Chinese Perspectives on International Power Shifts and the Sino-EU Relations. So most of the research, I think, is about concentrate on the scholars' thinking. And what are the main findings of these surveys and literature reviews, because they do this kind of perception research first to do the public survey, opinion survey, and then also look at the journals, how the Chinese scholars write about Europe. According to this finding, of course, we can tell a lot of things, but I think something may be beyond our imagination. So these are the things I think it's interesting. The Nottingham University's project, their finding is the public is not as nationalistic as the prediction since 2008. Because I think you all know, in 2008, Beijing Olympic Game that year, a lot of criticism toward China occurred. And also the Chinese opinion's attitude suddenly become very, very nationalistic. But afterwards, because this survey is done in 2010, maybe 2 years past, anyhow, the conclusion is, because they try to ask a lot of questions, and I attend their conference, although this has not been published, but during the conference, what I heard, what they tell us about the research result is Chinese public is not as nationalistic as they have predicted. Of course, the Chinese public know EU-China relations more about conflicts. But anyhow, on the other hand, when you ask for the attitude toward Europe, actually they are quite friendly toward Europeans. Maybe the best friend for the Chinese, for the public, is Russia. And the second one is Europe. Of course, Japan is the worst. That's what we think well, this is so difficult issue to resolve. But better than the U.S., better than the Japanese, that's for sure. Even after Olympics, we can still find this. The Europeans have a generally very positive attitude toward the Europeans, according to the survey. But at the same time, I think it's also interesting to see that elites are more critical toward the Western, including Europe. I mean, this is not a, you couldn't call it, they're already very, very nationalistic. I mean, the elites, economic, media, everything, because they have done this, they put all the kind of opinion poll to also done some interview according to their funding, Nottingham University's project funding. So they found this, and I think we have to think about it. It can be something positive, because maybe the intellectuals are more rational, or they are more nationalistic, they're more radical. What does it mean? So these lead me to do more research about the critical thinking toward the Europeans. That's why I choose the topic. I want to see why this happened, what's the critique from the Chinese scholars toward Europe, and what's the understanding of the Chinese scholars? The standing of Chinese scholars, I think basically the finding is they normally have good knowledge about Europe. So that could mean Chinese government is advised by well-informed experts. They know the complication of European Union. They know what is the Western way of doing things, especially the European political system, something like this. That's according to their survey and according to the research, like done a project, a paper done by David Schomburg, is an U.S.-based expert, and that's also his conclusion. He thinks, the Chinese scholars have good knowledge about Europe. And then, actually, Chinese scholars have a very positive assessment toward European model, domestically and internationally. And this is very, very true and obvious during 1980s. At that time, several things attract the Chinese intellectuals. They just love European model. What kind of things attract Europeans, the Chinese? Well, social security system, welfare state, and especially democratic. Other things also important, development policy, sustainable development, green politics. Lots of things, I think, attract your Chinese experts. And at the same time, another interesting thing is the Chinese and Europeans are sharing some important ideas in international order at the same time. For instance, multilateralism and multipolar or interpolar world. But this arouses a lot of debate. People doubt if the Chinese really share the same opinion with the Europeans. Well, actually, they're just a wishful thinking. Because nowadays, the honeymoon period between a relationship between China and Europe has been over. Now we can see a lot of debate, quarrels, conflicts. I think I will give a thought about these current research finding. My feeling is, my reflection is, actually Chinese perception of the world, including Europe, should be understood as a process of learning and selective taking. So it's not possible for Chinese to take hold of things from anything, from any party. But it's just that learning and still in the process of learning, and including learning from the Europe experience. That's, I think, although there is a lot of criticism and critical thinking occurred, but this is still the process. And the second thought is interactions between the sense of inferiority and national pride. This is something, two aspects all occur from the for the Chinese mindset. And the other there are some tension between two concepts. The other pair is universal objective law and the conventional wisdom of keeping and pursuing Chinese characteristics. This is, again, something, there is some tension between these two. We want to just abide by the objective, universal objective law, but at the same time, it seems, well, politically, wisely, you should be characteristic with your own history and tradition. I think these kind of tension and also these kind of double-sided mindset constitute the dynamics of the process. It's always just sometimes leaning to this and sometimes leaning to that. So it's necessary, and at the same time, it's necessary to watch the nationalistic elements in the process carefully. This is something I think most of the researchers have noticed, but at the same time, I think it's also necessary to rethink about the debate between universalism and particularism, cosmopolitanism and communitarianism. I don't know if this kind of term is still used in Europe. According to my conversation between Pekka and me and also some other friends here, they think, well, what do you mean by that? But at the moment, we do, for the Chinese scholars, we do are talking about this because we think that's the basic idea when we look at the world, try to learn and also try to adapt themselves to the world trend, but with their own tradition. And the third thought is Chinese elite's perception of Europe affects not only China-Europe relation. This is most of the study have been concentrating on, but I think the other thing are also important. The thing is the direction of domestic political economy. And actually, when we think talk about the domestic political economy, actually European experience come out. And this kind of understanding should also be included in our study on the Chinese perception of Europe, because these two things are related very deeply. And then I want to just touch upon the main focus, the important in the importation and development of post-study in China. The post-study in China, just like I have said, why I focus on this, because I want to look at closely about what are the critical thinkings toward Europe is based on. And that's something I found. The flourishing of post-studies, we can say it, call it 后学, post anything. And post can be a very fashionable term. When you are post, you mean, well, you are beyond some ordinary things. You are trying to be super good, just a very, just in the very, very front of the historical trend. I think that sounds, but at the same time, it can also mean, well, you are in the air. You're not on the ground. You are the something very, very strange. But anyhow, although China is still in the very difficult process of industrialization, post-study has been imported. And the time is 1990s. 1980s is the time for the Chinese to be in a, some kind of enlightenment movement, to learn from the West everything. But in 1990s, I think it have been divided. And what imported from China is postmodernism and postcolonialism. And these two things, I think, the, are the most important philosophical or just thoughts for the which the Chinese think are very attractive or just very inspiring. And this should be understood in the context of a anti-Western trend. I use the term not in a very strict way, because I want to just make this contrast. In 1980s, all the intellectuals are liberal. They just are eager to learn from the outside world, and the Western world just a symbol of the advanced, of the good side of everything. Although politically have a lot of pressure to say, well, no, it's of course not good enough. But according to the intellectuals' understanding, this is for sure. So compared with 1980s, 1990s, we have a kind of a shift of perception. And during this shift, post-study occurred. And the idea is confront Western learning with native learning. Before, that's the so-called slogan. Everything we say, oh, China is exceptional. So every time we have the Western thing, I think somebody else will stand up and say, Chinese things are better. But right now, no. Use Western marginal discourse to resist the Western mainstream discourse. And that be the new fashion. So how to criticize the West and use the Western marginal discourse? Postmodern is one of them. Chinese intellectuals had a flattering image of the West in 1980s due to limited contacts and conflicts with the West. So that's kind of Chinese scholars' understanding. To say why we are just so fond of the West in 1980s. The reason is at that time, there's not much contact. But nowadays, we have so many interaction. So one of the explanation of the Chinese elite's critical idea, critical attitude toward the Europeans maybe also come from this. They know what it is. Maybe they're critical, but not very extreme, not very emotional. That's one of the explanation. And that can also help us to understand this period of time's thinking trend. And in 1990s, Chinese economy just developed very fast, so the interaction between the Chinese and the world also increasingly increased very, very in a large scale. So the nationalistic feeling of the Chinese intellectuals was greatly awakened. That year, I remember there is a book called China Can Say No and this kind of thing. Actually, the book does not mean anything. But it's just an attitude. Before, 美国 means a beautiful imperialism. But afterwards, much more complicated attitude. For the intellectuals, that's very obvious. And I think if we can compare the Chinese post-study with the Western post-study, there's some difference. The difference is that the Chinese has tried to adopt a new position. What the new position is to refuse to take either side of the opposition of universal, particular, classical, modern, this kind of truth, one-sided position. Universal, particular, I think postmodern is a kind of deconstruct. Deconstruct the Enlightenment thought. And this kind of thing, I think, is kind of universalism, like universal law, universal value. This kind of thing, I think, is done by the postmodernism in a very forceful way, I think. And classical or traditional modern, this kind of tension, if you adopt this kind of one way or the other thinking, it means you understand history along a linear evolution route. That's something the Chinese scholars don't want to take. So actually, they have some distance from the pure meaning of postmodernism. They try to avoid this kind of choose this kind of alternative, very extreme alternative. And the other feature is they try to assume the role of, according to Gramsci, concept is an organic intellectual. This means what? This means a kind of not that much critical. But of course, it's related to Gramsci theory. But Gramsci theory, when he used this term, it means try to build up a new hegemony, then you begin to form a organic intellectual thoughts, and then you become gradually grow up, and then occupy the position of hegemony. Organic intellectual means it's not a critique. It's not critic. towards something. Actually, it's part of the society's mainstream. It's just the status quo, and also, or you want to build up new status quo. This is the meaning of organic intellectual. So this means that not that much deconstruction. That's at least one of the understanding of the Chinese researcher. He observed this, Zhang Yiwu. His interpretation about post study of China, and the impact of post study. I think critical analysis of the relationship between power and the discourse, I regard this as the postmodernism thought's very core idea. And this kind of idea has been very popular now. So everybody began to familiar with this, and they think this is a very useful instrument to be critical, to think about things in a more relativist position, and to give a position of the Chinese exceptional argument. And so I think that's part of the meaning of it. And again, and also related to the Chinese IR scholars. IR scholars in China, inside China, actually compared with people work in sociology and philosophy, they are not very critical. They are try to be compromise, and they are more go with the mainstream thinking, not very cynical, not very, very radical. But at the same time, I think the interesting thing is the IR scholars, they don't have a good interest in postmodern IR theory, international relations theory. But at the same time, the terminology of post theories has been co-opted in order to deconstruct Western geostrategy and Western centrism. So actually, we have some very important IR scholars, including Wang Yizhou. I think if you know some big names about China, you will know this name. He's not a critical thought or left-wing thinkers. No, not at all. But we can find this kind of analyzing and this kind of critique toward their unsatisfactory toward the Western foreign policy. They will use this kind of term to be critical and to argue for their support the Chinese special positions legitimacy. This is a kind of important and regular discourse, or maybe not that direct, but indirectly this kind of thinking become a part of the Chinese understanding, scholars' understanding. And more specifically, Chinese perception about postmodern Europe. Postmodern Europe means anything. Domestically, welfare state. Internationally, the normative power pursuit. And regionally, integration. These we concluded into a one big concept, postmodern Europe. And so postmodern sounds and I think the European Union, especially European Union, I think maybe the Finnish foreign policy is a little bit different. But at least the European Union foreign policy, that's for very clear, it's a very clear, and of course it's adopted, it's raised by the scholars. Normative power means we want to just spread the norm of the Europeans toward the world, and that's quite legitimate, and we should be more powerful in doing this. For this attitude, the Chinese scholars, more or less, some people will think this is just a self-righteous, that's the one side. And the other side, the other extreme, is the European way is a direction to follow. So we can find this kind of articles published in the journals about international studies, also European studies at the same time. So I couldn't say which kind of attitude is the only attitude. Now we are a more just a divided society, and including in the Chinese scholars. What's the conclusion? My topic is at the moment, the perception. At the moment, I think at the moment is just the short term, but at the moment it's still important. At the moment, first about euro crisis. It's a very debatable question. If you ask it, the scholars, not in European studies, they think, well, that's the over of Europe. But if you ask the European study scholars, they are quite positive. They think, well, this is an exaggerated crisis. It's not a real crisis. People just want to see this down of Europe. And definitely, the Europeans' way of doing things is better than the Americans. We actually have some this kind of tension between the European studies person and American studies person. The Americans, we are much more influenced. I think they have a much bigger influence of the American study scholars. But European scholars, study scholars, always have a basically very, very positive attitude toward European model. But at the same time, in this discussion, I try to tell you what are the critical thinking and how critical it is. And this is about euro crisis. So for the European, because I've attended a lot of conference about euro crisis, and the basic signal, all the very important figures, I mean, in European studies, they are positive toward the future of Europe. But the public, maybe they are not. And the in more broad concept of intellectuals, maybe they are not. Because they think, well, Europeans are too socialism. We should be more liberalism and even more capitalism. And that's the efficient way of doing things. So we are discussing it. The result will, you should have an eye on the October this year, because we'll have an important conference there, parties congress. That will tell you something about the political direction. And another thing is also interesting, Olympic. Closed Olympic. The Olympic Games, when you see the open ceremony, a lot of young people feel shocked. So, well, they're so happy, but the audience is not so happy because it sounds, well, chaos, not so ordered. When you see the Chinese Olympic opening ceremony, everything is prepared so carefully. But if you look at the British way of doing the ceremony, well, they're dressed in a mess. Or in a just if you see the internet discussion, the young people, that's the impression. And the other thing is the closing ceremony. So what? That's the concert, not a real closing ceremony. I don't know what's your feeling, but at least what I read from the youth who are very active in telling things in internet, that's their feeling. So right now, it's not a very, very good moment to see the Chinese affection toward the Europeans. But I think they are still, like I have said, the basic trend is still there. This is just a very short-term phenomenon. And some noteworthy ideas underlying the feeling from this research, I think my understanding is that Europe has been the most important representative of West. This is previous research. They try to take their conclusion from the survey. But I think it's not very, very telling or overall telling. I try to relate these two things together. I think that's also important for us to understand the Chinese thought trend overall way. And I think we all should admit Chinese intellectuals' perception of the West is much more divided now compared with that of the 1980s. And also, you should also notice that inside Chinese intellectuals, different field scholars, maybe their orientation is different. Like economists, they are very, very liberal. Nobody have a real or just the majority of them, they are just a pro-neoliberalism. I think just the minority of them think, well, should be critical toward this. But IR scholars, their basic, their overall, but this is just an observation. Like I've said, according to survey, you have a different picture. But when I have very close contact, I talked with people when I attend the conference, And I think the trend is that for the IR scholars, they are more with the Western mainstream, but the critical thinking is developing. Even you can look at the very important figures in IR studies, you can find this. Just every research you can find, they have a good understanding of why the West is so to Chinese, but at the same time, when they argue for their own position, they will just developing a more critical thinking. They think that's maybe too arrogant to say this normative power policy, although actually it's understandable and in some ways it's very positive. So at least this critical thinking is growing. And I think this kind of critical thinking is not the worst. It's much, much better than the emotional critique. Just to use your emotion to say, oh, the West is always very treat us just illy. This is much better way do a critical thinking. And the tension between the universal and the particular remains a challenge both for Europe and China. I think this is a very basic question. I don't know if I have made it clear because during my previous conversation, I think these terms may be not used by the Europeans anymore, but I have already found out the Chinese began to rethink about it. What's the relation between these two? The Europeans, according to the Chinese understanding, are more pro-universalism. But at the same time, Chinese is in a process of being universalized, actually try to adapt to the new world and to try to be a responsible power. But of course, it's very debatable to see, well, this is a successful, or this is a real intention of the Chinese. The Chinese have a plot to all conquer the world. Is it true? Maybe you have also raised this kind of doubt. But actually, learning very hard is also, I can see, but the current emotion is quite negative because I have some friends who work for the government, and nowadays they are much more easy go to the critical side toward the Europe to the Western policy. They think we are illy treated. This is a very strong feeling. And but when we look at this conflict, I think Chinese has a long tradition of eclecticism, and the Europeans also have a similar term, I call it a third way, 第三条道路. They also try to find a kind of balance. Now, is it time for us to end up the balance? We have found out the only way of doing things. I think this is something I think the Europeans and the Chinese maybe should have more discussion. That's my presentation. Thank you for your attention.